joining us on the YSF podcast, the podcast brought to you by Yorkshire Sport Foundation. In this episode, we're celebrating the sixth school to be accredited as a centre of excellence for physical activity, and that school is Parkinson Lane Community Primary School in Halifax. They've been accredited in the before and after school clubs category, all categories of course linked to the Creating Active Schools framework that was devised here in Yorkshire a few years ago. If you want to find out more about the Centre of Excellence scheme and how your school can get involved, or how you can learn from the schools who are already accredited as Centres of Excellence, head to yorkshiresport.org/primarype, or you can send us an email, media@yorkshiresport.org, and we'll pass that on to relevant members of our team. In this episode, we have three guests. We have Tom Wood, who is the assistant head and the PE lead. Saika Riatsa, who is a parent and link governor at the school. The first person we'll hear from is Rizwana Ahmed, who is deputy head, year six teacher, and has been at the school for more than 20 years, so is perfectly placed to give us an introduction to Parkinson Lane.
We serve a community where the figures for deprivation are incredibly high. We're in the highest 10% nationally for deprivation, so you can imagine the sort of intake of pupils that we're getting. Unemployment levels in the area are very, very high. There's lots of back-to-back housing. The vast majority of our children that come into our early year setting have little or no English. And obviously English is their second language. Often their first language is very underdeveloped as well. And then alongside that, the problem is kind of further exacerbated by the fact that there's very little quality provision or very little provision for preschool, and certainly no provision at all for extracurricular activities for any of our children right from the age of nursery all the way up to year six. So there's a huge gap that our children come into school with, not just academically, but personally, socially, emotionally as well. Our school is very much at the heart of the community, and over the 22, 23 years that our head teacher has been here, Cooksey has developed a level of trust and a fabulous partnership with our parents. Is instilled a sense of our parents being seen as co-educators. There's an open door policy. There's a real transparency, parental involvement at all sort of levels, and the provision that we have in place to address some of the gaps that I've already hinted at is heavily subsidised by school through fundraising events that our PTA are fabulous at, and our head is brilliant at never paying full price for anything, is very money savvy, and that really helps. And our staff give of their time freely. So a lot of the after-school provision, before-school provision that Tom will talk about in more detail, that comes about because our staff are not getting paid for any of that. Instill a sense of learning isn't for here and now. It's a lifelong learning, and it's a journey that never really ends. And the skills that we try to instill into our children now, we want them to be used now, but further on in terms of college, universities, if that's the vocation that they or the route that they choose to take. But also when they're adults themselves and when they're parents themselves, we want them to think back to these experiences and look at how important they are, and for them to be factored into their everyday lives as well. There's been a great deal of work throughout the 22, 23 years that Cooksey's been here in terms of raising aspirations for all of our children, going from a baseline where when we did some early work on heroes and aspirations, we asked our children about what they wanted to do. And one of our children at the time talked about wanting to go into, he saw the drug dealers in the area. And we do have that problem. We've had that problem for a long, long time. He saw that as the epitome of success. And that's what he wanted to go into, because he saw the flash cars and the flash lifestyle and the readily available money. And at that point, we knew that as a school, we had a lot of work to do to address that misconception. And we've, over the 22, 23 years, carried out a great deal of work to really raise those aspirations, and in the very real sense of the word, where you're giving children real life chances to make that positive contribution. And we do want to break through that cycle of deprivation as well, because deprivation exists, but we can only break out of it once we've raised aspirations and shown children that there is a different way. And we do, as a school, pride ourselves on But we know that we can find something that every single child can excel in. And because they excel in it, they feel good about themselves, and that positivity then links into their work and their academic attainments and achievements.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. Very thorough, and clearly lots going on, lots of great stuff going on at the school over a long period of time. I guess we're here to talk about your Centre Excellence status and sort of before and after school clubs. And we just wanted to talk about some of the challenges and the gaps you referenced that you're trying to address as a school. I presume that comes into the principles that underpin how you put together that before and after school offer for pupils and their families.
Definitely, because where we recognised right from the early days that there was a real gap. Basic things like when we first started putting an after school, before school provision in place, we had lots of children coming into school, not even having had breakfast in the morning. They were walking into school late or still half asleep. And the first meal that they were having was with us at dinner time. And we weren't quite sure when the previous meal was had the night before. So that was something that we put into place straight away. And we saw a real increase in engagement and focus from our children. As well as that, the after school provision was there to really combat some of the issues that are happening within the local community. So where children didn't have a purposeful activity to be employed in after school, there was problems out in the streets, local streets, playgrounds. And because there are issues of crime, and I imagine lots of communities do have that, there was a real danger that our children could be going down the wrong path. And as a school, we saw ourselves as being in that pertinent place to address that straight away. So when we first started, we didn't have any after-school provision whatsoever. And like I said, there's nothing within the local area other than hanging around on street corners. So we put together our first ever football teams, our sports, you know. So we started off with a boys' football team, and it lent itself then nicely into getting some of our girls on board. And then it started, that was a catalyst then. And it started from there, and very much we utilised our staff skills and our staff passion. And those are the two things that led on to all the other OOSH clubs that Tom will talk about as well. But
yeah, and Tom, I guess when we were chatting ahead of recording this, it's I'm not going to say that all schools, it's an add-on, it's like, you know, a breakfast club and a childcare arrangement after school, which works for some schools and works for some families. They just need that because of work or whatever it might be, but from what we're talking to you guys about, it very much is all encompassing. And in terms of the schools, the vision for the school that Rizwan has spoken about there, it's as obvious as this might be to say, a lot of thought and consideration goes into what you're putting on, isn't it? So just talk us through that kind of process, how you decide what you want to do and what you do.
Yeah, so in terms of why we do what we do and our intent, as Riz has mentioned, we do it because we believe it develops the child holistically by offering them these extra opportunities. And also it helps to increase their cultural capital, which is my children, you know, badly need. In terms of how we actually design our clubs, we involve the children in that process. So we have sports leaders at the school, and every year at the start of September, we'll consult with sports leaders from every year group and ask what type of sporting clubs they'd like to do. We've brainstorm ideas. Then we also involve staff in that process to, you know, ask staff what type of clubs they're happy to do. And we come to that sort of arrangement. So we schedule everything out at the start of September. These are going to be all the after-school clubs for the year. And we ask staff to sign up for those and give us the time where they can do. And what we end up doing on most years is we run around 68 clubs throughout the year. 17 of those clubs are run every week. So things like football or boxing or cricket, for example, they run throughout the year. And dance is another example of that. Some of these clubs operate before school. We've got like tennis and pentathlon, which I know we might talk about in a bit more detail later. And some of them run after school, so football and dance. But yeah, the children are very much involved in the process of coming up with these clubs as well.
So dance specifically then, where's the journey and that start for dance?
Yeah, so Dan started. Now, this goes back to what I already talked about, the fact that when our head first came and took over the school, we had a real reluctance from our parents to physically actually come into the building. They, prior to that, their schooling experience was, it was a place where they sent their children, but it wasn't a place where they had any input or felt welcome in any way and that kind of thing. And part of our open door policy all those years ago was to get parents in. Now, the community that we serve is predominantly from the South Asian heritage. So as a way to get the community into our school building, Gugsy, our head teacher, organized some community events. And these were basically evenings where we invited our parents to come into school and we put on performances for them. But initially, there weren't performances that the children were doing. It was we invited local groups in or groups from the locality that would reflect the interests of the community. So we had a Qawwali band that came in and played Qawwali. We had drumming, dhol drumming, tabla drumming, and we had people singing. And it was very much designed around engaging our community, basically. Now, the dancing came from that. So we had a group called the Hira Dancers, and those were people that Gugsy had found. And they came in and taught dance. And dance, you know, is part of the PE curriculum. And prior to that, the dance that we were teaching wasn't a form that the children were necessarily engaging with. And there was quite a big reluctance from our parents to even see that as important. But similarly, the mindset of our parents at that time was that really the after school provision wasn't that important either. You went to school to learn, to read, write, and what have you. And after that, the rest of it was just play. So when the Hira Dancers came in, and there were a group of boys that were dancing, and that in itself combated another issue that we had, where I imagine in lots of schools that still exist today, where there's a reluctance from boys to dance and it's seen as a very sort of perhaps a girly thing to do. So these boys came in and they danced as part of the performance, and then Gugsy employed them for a short while to actually teach dance right the way through school. So that provided staff with the opportunity for some CPD. And again, it gave us an insight into a very bespoke, personalised and relevant curriculum, because we were still teaching dance, but we were teaching dance that was reflective of the heritage of our children, basically, in the community. So it was Bhangra dancing set to music that had lots of dhol drumming in it and things like that. And then obviously you can't, you know, as a school, you can't continue to pay an external body to provide that for you. So what we did then is one of our teaching assistants at the time took it upon herself to then teach that right the way through school. So once the group left, our TA at the time, a lady called Iram, took it on and she taught dance right the way through from reception all the way up to year six. And as part of that, she taught it after school as well. So the after school provision for dance came about throughout this journey, offered opportunities for our high school children to come back. And as long as they still maintain the ethos of Parkinson Lane, we're happy to put that provision in place for them. And the high school children that came back were absolutely fabulous, because there was a real desire to still want to continue that after school provision. And as a result of the work that we were doing, we decided to showcase it at a local level for the schools in the community and our sort of local council and local authority. And then it went from there to national and then international as well. And all of those came about because of,
No, that's what I was going to say. And it was, you're talking there, and I guess people go, oh, dance, fantastic. Understand the link to engaging with the parents more. And that's obviously at the heart of it. And it's fantastic. But I suppose the thing that people might sit up on, I know when Alex, our education manager, told me about this before I spoke to Tom, he said that it's not just a case of, I don't know, doing it in the school hall or doing it in the playground or going to other schools. You've been to some quite far-flung places, haven't you, with this?
We have. So I know Gugsy always says that we've danced under the third leg of the Eiffel Tower. I'm not quite sure which one is the third leg of the Eiffel Tower, but we definitely have danced underneath the Eiffel Tower or in front of the Eiffel Tower. So because we wanted it to be high profile and we wanted that real engagement, and we also wanted it to be a celebration for the children that take part in the after school provision. And because we recognise realise that they're making a contribution to school. It's a real positive contribution. And as a result of that, we, like I said, we fundraised, we did all sorts of things where we, you know, danced for local schools and local community. And from there, we raised lots of money. And we, our first residential trip abroad was to France, to Paris. And so our children have actually danced in France, in Belgium. We've taken them to London and Scotland, Italy, Germany, Cornwall, Bosnia, to mention a few. When our children go and take part in their residentials to the Lake District and in Wales, we go and dance there as well. And we are at the moment wanting to raise enough money somehow the next few years to take our children to Turkey to showcase dancing and singing. The bigger impact of this, or the bigger aim of this, is to ensure that our children see themselves as global citizens, because the community they come from is incredibly insular, but we don't want our children to have lives that are insular as their parents or, you know, grandparents. We want them to think and know that the whole world wide is open to whole world is open to them, and we want them to partake in that and to move beyond Parkinson Lane and go out there and, you know, recognize that the world is a big, beautiful place and they need to be part of it.
Psych, I guess, is an ideal opportunity to bring you in. I guess not with your, it's mutually exclusive, but not as your PTA role, but just as purely a parent at the school. Some of the things Rizwana is saying there, without asking you to speak necessarily on behalf of every single parent in the school, how valuable do you find that approach to what the school's doing a lot alongside, clearly, you know, delivering the curriculum and everything like that?
To be honest, I find it incredibly valuable. I've got two children who have now left school and two children who are currently still at Parkinson in primary school. And some of the trips that Riz has just talked about, my children have actually been to Bosnia and other places. And opportunities that, through dance that they've been provided with, it is true that, I mean, the children have come back and told us about the experiences they've had. And we've then, as parents, been looking at, okay, we need to try and take our children to visit these places again. So, through the opportunities that school have provided, the children have come back and they've sort of opened our eyes to some of the, you know, okay, we could go there with our children if school can take them. I mean, at the moment, me and my husband are looking at taking the children to Bosnia. Now, we would never, in all honesty, have ever thought about taking the children on a trip to Bosnia had the children not experienced what they did at school, you know, through the school here. And I think this, one of the things that I've always found before I became a governor as well at the school, was that the school are really successful in engaging parents. You know, like Aritha talked about our South Asian heritage, the school actually use that as a way of engaging parents. And I know, you know, through my previous life as working as a primary school teacher myself, in lots of school, it's often the children's culture, language, or what they have is left at the school gate. But, you know, the one thing that I think this school does incredibly well is they embrace what the children bring and they use that, you know, and it's a fantastic way to engage parents, because as soon as a school does that, you feel like they value what you have. Your opinion, your culture, your identity, your language, all these things matter. And, you know, sometimes it's not what you say, it's what you do. You know, because sometimes, you know, we can say, okay, we're inclusive and, you know, we value everybody. Well, what does that mean in practice? And I think one of the strengths that I've always liked about this school is there are lots of ways that they do make you feel valued. Even, you know, things like the, you know, we've talked about the breakfast club and, you know, the different opportunities where the children get to perform the community event. I mean, I tell my husband, I've always said that even before I became a governor, now I come with my governor hat on as well as parent. But for me, that's my night out in theatre. Because honestly, those people who've had the privilege of watching the community event, it's nothing less than, you know, to be honest, it exceeds, you know, any external visitors we've had. And I would, you know, we'd often have front row bits and I'd be like, you know, I am paying for that front row because it's well worth it. You see the children perform almost at university level. You don't see these performances in secondary schools, which is a shame. And the voice that children get through that, the confidence. You know, it's amazing. So from a parent perspective, you know, it's amazing.
Tom, I guess to move from the dance, another one that we want to speak about is Panathlon. For, I guess, to bring it right back to the basics, some PE leads or teachers or parents who might be listening to this might not have heard of Panathlon before. Just give an overview of what Panathlon is and what sort of children it's more specifically aimed towards?
Yeah, so Panathlon is obviously a national organisation which delivers a lot of inclusive sports, particularly for your SEND learners. And it's something that we've got on board with over the last 3 or 4 years at school. And it's had a huge impact, actually, on lots of our SEND learners in terms of sport and their holistic development. We've very much embraced it at our school by making it not something that's seen as exclusive, but something that's inclusive to all pupils. We didn't want Panathlon to be something that was seen as just for our children with SEND, because if you do that, sometimes it can appear a little bit tokenistic. And as well as that, lots of the children can very quickly pick up on, do you know what, this isn't the cool club to be in. So we want to make our Panathlon the cool club. So by doing that, we made sure that we trained up our pupils as leaders of these Panathlon events. So all of our year six pupils are trained to deliver Panathlon style sports. And we do that via our, we have a link with the Calderdale School Sports, and we train up our pupils. They get a sort of national qualification, nationally recognised qualification in sports leadership for that. And what we try to do is every morning in the playground at 8:30, as part of our breakfast club provision, we have a set group of pupils from year six that lead these SEND friendly games outside in the playground. And parents can come along and join in. Pupils can come and join in before school. Anybody that's in breakfast club comes and joins in. So it gives it a real high profile. And then what we do is we select children from our SEND register to represent school in the Panathlon competitions, which might be Calderdale standard, or it might be West Yorkshire or Yorkshire's. And we've had a lot of success in that area. But yeah, something we believe it's had a huge impact on the school.
How have you seen that perhaps wider impact in the school, be that through skills or through personal development?
Yeah, it's, as I say, everything we do is try to develop the child holistically. So in terms of our SEND learners, we've seen an increase in confidence in many of them. Attendance at school has increased for many of our pupils, because now they've got something to, you know, a lot of them got something to work towards. Look, if you put the work in class, if you're here in school, you'll get to represent school in the Panathlon competitions. It's a real good incentive for our pupils to learn and to be in school. Academic performance as well has increased. We do a lot of evaluations of our club, so we track all our SEND learners, and we look at the progress they're making academically. And we found a huge correlation between participation in the Panathlon clubs and academic progress and outcomes. So again, you can look at the impact in so many different ways. But so the main thing for us is it's just looking at that child and seeing the smile on that child's face and seeing how they're really happy to be in school and socialising with friends and learning valuable life skills that will set them up for the rest of their life.
When we talk about impact, I'm looking at, you know, the targets that we set for our SEND children, and we're reviewing them. And one of the things we've noticed through this Panathlon that the children, like Thomas said, their confidence is raised. You see them meeting the targets before, but a lot of you can see the confidence, the participation in, you know, these clubs has had a massive impact, and also the targets, you know, they get through more of their targets. I feel like, so when we're looking, every time I have a meeting with Ruth and Tom, and it's fantastic to see the impact that this has had, you know, all across the whole curriculum. It's not just looking at the PE aspect, the physical aspect of it, the mental health, the participation in other subjects. So yeah, from you know, from a governor perspective, it's definitely we've seen the positivity of this of Panathlon.
And when we talked last week, we spoke about the other thing we wanted to focus on that leads in, I think, from the Panathlon was the weekly Get Fit Families. Who wants to take a lead on just explaining how those sort of two activities or offers, if you like, came across? Because that's another example of helping to engage parents and keep them engaged, I guess, isn't it?
So this the Get Fit campaign came about because we have something that's a local thing where we have a sort of process in place where children in reception have their height and weight measured, and this is by the local health authority, so that those that data isn't sort of shared with us
at all until sort of by the time that cohort gets to year six. So they take the measurements in reception, they take the measurements in year six, and then school gets a bit of a report to say what children's health is like, basically. And alarmingly, some of the reports that we were getting back were basically saying that a lot of our children in year six were, you know, on the opposite end of the spectrum, where it was, you know, almost like clinically obese. And that was quite alarming for us as a school, because we thought, well, hang on, we need to do something about that. That shouldn't be the case. So we did see extremes. We had children who appeared to be severely underweight, and children who appeared to be perhaps overweight or along those lines. And so what we did, we reached out to our local community. We discussed the issue with our parents, and within the community that we serve, their diabetes is a big thing, heart attack is a big thing. And what we do have in the locality, unfortunately, is a high street full of takeaways and fast food that's readily available and cheap. So there's a few issues there that obviously we're fighting against. And what we did, we engaged with our parents, and we invited our parents in, and we said, look, this is a campaign that we're wanting to take forward. We want you to come in. If any of you have got the time, please come in and support us. And the idea was that we invited parents in to come and take part in activities that one of our teachers, Nikki, had put together. So a range of physical fitness activities, fun games, interactive sessions. So parents and their children took part in that. Then we also liaised with our kitchen staff downstairs, our chefs, and they helped our parents to put together a menu that was perhaps healthier. So looking at alternatives, instead of using ghee or things like that, we were using healthier alternatives to cooking and looking at. So it wasn't just a one hit fix. It was look at diet, look at exercise, look at a changing mindset, and then those things then you could take forward, and it's again it's impact on the longer term rather than short term. So that's how it came about. Now that's still continuing now, so a lot of our mums usually, and it is our mums that come and take part in that, every Wednesday morning they meet with Nikki, they take part in physical activity, the children are involved in it as well, and then as part of that there's a real focus on developing a positive and healthy attitude to life, physically through what they're eating, through the diet, and that then linked into what the PTA were doing as well. So the PTA look at mental health and well-being as part of that physical fitness as well. So every half term, the PTA get together and they organise to go out somewhere. And that usually is linked to some of the trips that their children are taking part in, usually the local walks in the area. So things like Ogden Water, you know, down to Shipton Park, things like that. And what we're trying to do is build opportunities for parents and children to have shared experiences. So if we're taking the children as part of their yearly trips and trips that are linked to their curriculum area, but then if we share those experiences with their own parents, then we're hoping that during the holidays, during half terms, during the summer break, families can do that together as well, and through that adopt a healthier lifestyle.
Sorry, that's something that we definitely have copied. You know, a lot of the places we've taken children to walk, to Ogden Water, Harcourt Sagwell, directly as a result of experiences that the children have had in school. But also being a member of the Parkinson Lane community and I living locally, I've noticed a lot of these behaviours being sort of copied by parents. And even, you know, I have the privilege of, you know, walking through the streets and you see the children playing the way, you know, certain sports that they do in school and organising themselves, you know, like Tom says, the play leaders. And even during lockdown, one of the things I know we did as a family is we went for lots of walks for our, you know, mental health. Because, you know, these were things I remember when I used to come with my children to the breakfast club here in the morning doing the aerobics, and then with some of the parents, you know, talking about, you know, going to the PTA meetings, you know, the benefits of walking. And you know, those experiences that, you know, we've had here. And I think one of the things, I think it's really important to mention is that as a governor, when I often speak to Riz and Tom about, you know, the impact on all the teachers, because this is teachers giving up their own time. You know, they don't actually get paid for these clubs. And it's amazing to see, you know, I think even that phrase, you know, the teachers go the extra mile here doesn't actually do justice to what they do. You know?
Yeah, and I think, Rizwana, in your sort of opening
when you're talking about what the school does, and I think you mentioned there that it's a, we feel like a hub for the community, and I guess that example you've just given there is a perfect example of that. And I guess you've perhaps been there long enough to perhaps see some sort of, this almost a generational change that Sykes perhaps talking there, that parents are now demonstrating that to their children, and it'll carry on. So and we mentioned staff there, and obviously at the heart of anything and everything that happens at a school is your staff and what they, you know, because the 9 to 3, as I suppose very few people see a teacher's job as 9 to 3, but for those who do, there's so much more around it, just to do your job in the classroom or your job as a subject lead or whatever it might be. So much goes into it, as someone who, my fiance is a teacher, know full well. So so then to add on top of the things like the after school clubs, I guess you've got to have a person, and let alone a teacher, a person with the mentality and the characteristics that share that. So, and that comes into your recruitment process, as you were saying. So just tell us a bit about how you've got that within your recruitment process, I guess. Is it a direct question? Do they have to give examples? Tom, you look like you're poised.
Well, we've recently been going through that process of recruiting teachers, and I was part of the interview panel for that. We have it as one of our desirable qualities. So we list, obviously, essential, desirable, qualities. And one of the desirable qualities is that willingness to lead an after-school club. And at Parkslane, we very much believe that it's about getting the right person in through the door and getting people into your school who are willing to go above and beyond. Because to serve a community like we serve here, you have to do that to provide the best outcomes for the pupils. It's not just about the academic side of things, because that isn't enough to get the outcomes you need. So we always look for teachers who have that awareness and have the awareness of holistic development, rather than just always strictly English maths. It's one of our desirable qualities. But as I say, as well as that, it's looking for teachers that have that awareness of holistic development.
And I guess once you've, so that's the beginning, if you like, of it, and the teachers come in and they embrace that and they take off school clubs.
Yeah.
What you do next to kind of, well, you know, Rizwani said you've been there for more than 20 years, your head teacher's been more than 20 years. Not sure how long you've been there, Tom, but you often find that at good schools, teachers want to stay and things like that. So just talk about how you show that appreciation for staff for going that extra mile.
Yeah, well, we do a variety of, we can't obviously pay our staff, but we do a lot of appreciation through things like special meals. We put on a special meal every year for all the staff that run an after school club. We also do thank you, we get children to write thank you letters to the staff, very personal sort of thank you letters. This is what the club's done for me, thank you, you know, and what impact it's had on them. We also have room, we have a special room in school as well, which is our well-being suite. And our well-being suite was the idea of our head teacher, who decided to transform the loft space at school into a well-being room where staff could relax. It's got, you know, nice sofas in there. We even have a small gym, because it's very much ensuring that staff well-being is looked after in the same way as pupil well-being. And I think very much the ethos of the school is all around ensuring that well-being for all stakeholders. So we try to as much as we can in terms of saying thank yous and making staff feel appreciated for their efforts. And I think as well, staff understand the importance of before and after school clubs because they see the impact in the classroom. We always get staff to sort of measure and evaluate OOSH clubs and feedback as well about how things have gone. And we always find that whenever you're providing children with this additionality, you see the impact in the classroom. You see your behaviour of the pupils really improving. And for me, when I first joined Parkinson Lane, I'd trained in schools where the behaviour was quite challenging. And I came to this school and I was blown away by how well behaved the pupils were. I was sort of speaking to staff and saying, how come the pupils here are so well behaved? And they said, and I remember staff said to me at the time, well, listen, if they don't behave in the classroom, are you going to put them on the football team? If they don't behave in the classroom, are you going to put them on the cricket team? So when you've got these incentives to work towards, again, the behaviour in the classroom is better. And that, as a member of staff, is so good for your own mental well-being. At this school, we don't have to fight against any, you know, negative behaviour. and it allows you to be a teacher. So from 9 till 3, I can be a teacher because of what I do before and after school. And for me, that makes a huge, huge difference. And that's why I think most of our staff have been here such a long time.
And to come on the back of that also, because there's such a genuine appreciation from our parents. So if there are any issues, our parents completely support us because they know that we've got the child's best interests at heart at all times, and where they see staff giving of themselves before school, after school. And if there are any issues, then it's the parents will basically come in and support what school are doing. And that work makes for a fabulous working relationship then. And the children ultimately know that all these adults that are around them want the very best for them in every which way possible.
And sorry, if I can, from a parent perspective, I feel like my children, you know, those who have left the school and who are, you know, still at the school at the moment, they feel very invested in the school. It's, you know, because of these sports activities, you know, they feel a real sense of belonging. You know, they wear their Parkinson Lane, you know, PE shirt, stand out from the outstanding with great pride, because that is... They feel very much inclusive, you know, like Tom said, going back to making them a part of it, not just, you know, giving them, here, this is something you're going to do. And it does really, you know, sort of penetrate into all the other areas as well, in, you know, the behavior in the other subjects. So yeah, they've got a real interest to make sure that they do perform to that. And it goes back to school having really high aspirations for the children, you know.
I think as well, just like, I think in terms of, you know, how do we ensure staff get on board with all this process? I think the other thing is we have a collective ethos where everyone does the bit. And I think if you have a school where only a few members of staff are doing after school clubs, you don't have that sort of can-do culture. And here we have a very much can-do culture. Everyone is involved in a club. And because of that, the workload is shared out. So you're not doing, for example, hours and hours of after school clubs every week on your own. You know, you might do a 45, some staff do a 45 minute English club for half a term, and that's their contribution for the year. Other staff are happy to do it a little bit more than that. But what you find is because everyone's on board, it's all shared out. And that makes, again, a massive difference. I just wouldn't want your listeners thinking that, you know, members of staff here spend hours and hours and hours every week doing this. It's manageable.
Yeah. And I know you alluded to recruitment before and legacy as well. And, it, you know, just on the back of what Tom's saying, two of the TAs that work alongside me to do the Dance Ooze Club are actually ex-pupils as well. So they've gone away. They've left us. Well, they never really left us because they kept coming back from the high school clubs. And then when they've come back, they're thinking of pursuing professions, sort of teaching careers, but they're working with us as TAs at the moment, and both of them are ex-pupils, and both of them used to take part in a lot of the after-school provision. So it shows where Tom said everybody does their bit, but then even the children come back, and I know they're not children anymore, but they do come back and they're contributing, they're giving back, aren't they, in terms of what they've received as well.
When we do these and we talk about success, and there's so much, and, you know, I think going through the different things you spoke across the last 40 minutes, so much goes into this. There isn't a silver bullet or just one thing that will just transform a school with the click of the fingers. But for the other schools and PE leads who are listening to this, thinking specifically around your, obviously, your before and after school clubs, what would you say is at the heart of it or integral to it? I know that's quite a broad question. We've spoken about so many significant things individually, but be that a school that's perhaps starting out like you would have been many moons ago, or a school that's looking to develop it, what would you say would be the real thing to focus on? It might be a real practical thing, or it might be an ethos like you spoke about, Tom, there about everyone having a generating a can-do attitude. So a big question. I appreciate you've touched on lots of different things across this last 35 minutes or so. What would be perhaps the one thing you would want to recommend to other schools so they can try and sort of aspire to perhaps get to where you guys are?
I think start small, because if you start too big too quickly, it can become daunting. I mean, what we're talking about here is something that's grown over the 22 years.
Yeah.
I think, as Riz said, when our after-school clubs first began, Riz, you were mentioning it was very much on a small basis in terms of football or dance.
They did start off very small, and it was very much like Tom's saying, start small and grow. And I know our first football club came about because of an individual called David Horsfield, who's one of our teachers, incredibly passionate about football, and he wanted to replicate that in the children. And it was by taking them to watch matches first in the locality, then trying to put together that training, and then developing it from there, taking part in local competitions and further and that kind of thing. I'd say, as well as that, I would say, get your community on board. That community engagement, the engagement with parents, is crucial, because in the early days, we did have some barriers placed in front of us because we had people who didn't quite understand the importance of it. And our parents were a bit like, no, but after school, they need to go to the mosque. And therefore, they can't take part in the after-school provision. And so we had to have those challenging conversations with parents and even mosques to say, look, this is our remit for doing it. It's one evening, or, you know, and you've got to work along with the needs of the community as well. You can't disregard that either. But what you've got to do is show parents that there are other possibilities and other things that the children do need to do in terms of further engagement. Yes, they need to take part in mosques, clubs, or after school provision that the parents have in place, but they also need to do work in terms of developing as well-rounded individuals. Otherwise, they haven't got the opportunities available that other people will have when it comes to later on in life in terms of university places or even job offers. And one of the other things, it's addressing taboos, I would say, because we in the early days, especially with the background of dance, we did have to address some taboos because there was this culture of, you know, you're not allowed to dance. Culturally, you're not allowed to dance, and religiously, you're not allowed to dance. There was that we had to address. And then the girls not being able to, not perhaps being allowed to dance, and boys thinking it's not cool to dance. So there's a lot of things that you've got to do, and you it's small steps, engaging with the community, explaining, breaking things down, getting people on board. You've got to realize that you're never going to get 100% engagement, but 98% is good enough for us.
It's very good. Saika, I just wanted, I might be able to ask you the question you're about to answer, so apologies if that's the case. But thinking, because you do so much, I have to say which role I want you to consider this viewpoint from. But as a parent who, you said you've had children who've gone through the school and now moved on to high school, and children who are still in the school, again, this could be a practical thing. What does the school do particularly well to engage the parents? What do you think as a parent that they do particularly well to, that other schools might again be able to replicate, with the acknowledgement that communities are all, you know, will have some similarities, but will also have differences?
I think if there's one thing, is communication. I think the thing that this school does really well is, it just like what Rhys said, it could be taboos, misconceptions, or just, you just want a bit more information. I think this school, communication is fantastic. The open door policy, the meetings that they provide for parents. So when they do initiatives, when they are doing something, when you explain to somebody why you're doing something and you've got the dialogue, I think it's the dialogue between all the stakeholders. So as a parent, I know before I became a parent governor, we have an annual AGM, you know, for the parents, where the parents can come and ask questions, you know, from the school head, from the governors, right, what are you doing? And we can put any question we want. What I think is one of this, you know, is communication. Parents have been given a voice. All the stakeholders have a voice. And you feel like, actually, what I say matters. You know, my contribution, I've never had in all my experience of, you know, my children who are here and who have left, that whenever I've, let's say, raised a concern, wanted some more information about something or queried something, I've never felt like I'm not being heard. You know, if it's something that they can't answer at the time, it's like, okay, we look into this and get back to you, Mom. Or, you know, we have a discussion. This is why we can't do X, Y, and Z. And I think with anything, I've always been a strong believer in this. Good communication is vital. You need to know how to communicate with your parents. And because I know from, you know, experiences of, you know, people from other schools and in schools that I've worked in, some schools can be very dismissive of what parents have to say, not even listen. This is what we do. Off you go. You know, no discussion needed. Whereas I think if you want your parents on board, you need to have good dialogue, good communication. And I always felt like there's an open door policy.
So, Riz and Tom, then, to bring it all around, we've spoken about the what you do, the why you do it, and some of the how you do it. Always like to finish off with an example of, I guess, the difference that it's making, and that might be to you something with the pupil, something with the parents, something with a member of staff. What's your your go-to sort of memory or story of a of an impact that it's had? And I know you, I'll come to you, Riz, first. You did mention, I love that one that you mentioned, that school pupils are coming back and now helping and have aspirations to want to be teachers. But is it that for you? What's your main sort of impact story?
That one probably is the one for me, because it's not just having the impact for here and now. The here and now we see all the time. We see the confidence and the self-esteem, you know, it being increased. We see that engagement with school and the love of learning and love of being here. But for me, it's a legacy. And the legacy is that we've had an impact as a school through our extra provision that we've got before school, after school. And as a result of that, we've engaged people and we've turn people on in terms of coming into the teaching profession. And it's not an easy profession, especially if you look at the current climate of what teachers are facing. And if there's still teenagers and young adults who think this is a good profession to be in, and the overwhelmingly the reason is because of their experiences at Harkins Lane, and because of their experiences not just between the 9 and 3, but it's the before and after. And the fact that it gave them such a buzz, such a positivity, such a sense of belonging and such a sense of pride. And that's what they've come back, and that's what they're trying to instill in our children. And I know the two young men that I'm talking about, Heather and Hack, we laughingly refer to them as serial ooshers, because between them, they do more after school provision and before school provision than everybody else. So that for me is my, I think, overwhelmingly my favourite memory, my favourite moment of the work that we're doing. And I know, I believe that it makes a difference.
Brilliant. And Tom, yours?
Yeah, well, I've not had the pleasure of being here as long as Riz, so I've not yet seen pupils that I've taught come back through the door as teachers. But what I've seen in the short term is, if I even pick up on this year, real thing that sticks in my head is a pupil in my class who was on the vulnerable children's register. He'd suffered a really, you know, tragic bereavement in the family, and as a result of that, he came in September incredibly shy. He had very low attendance, and on top of that, he was also on the special educational needs register. So we looked at how we could sort of engage him in school life, and we got him really involved in the Panathlon club before and after school. And he was part of one of the teams who won the Calderdale Panathlon Festival. So he came back with a gold medal, and he was absolutely delighted. And the smile on his face, it was the first time I'd seen him smile all year. And that was around October time when he won that. And since then, his attendance has massively improved. Mum has mentioned at parents' meeting how much she enjoys coming to school now. Socially, he's got a really good friendship group going on there. And I think, if I look at the impact that's made on one of our most vulnerable pupils of so many needs, I think, wow, like, we're doing something right. And I think if I look at, you know, what's going to be the legacy of that in his future, I think it'll be huge. He's going to go to high school. He's going to have so many transferable life skills and resilience and confidence. And yeah, it kind of reminds me of why did I become a teacher in a climate like this? And they're the reasons why I became a teacher. And it's a real privilege to do the job and to work at this school.
You've been listening to the YSF podcast from Yorkshire Sport Foundation.